when we deployed with 341st, I was I had gone to DLI, but I hadn't gone to 35 Mike School yet. So I deployed as a 25 uniform. Halfway through the deployment, I got the opportunity to go to 35 Mike School and then go right back to deployment. So to go from a schoolhouse setting right into deployment, doing what you just learned, was a phenomenal experience. And then I spent the second half of the deployment as a 35 Mike.
So you went from deployed back to school, to a TRADOC environment, back to a deployment.
Yes.
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversation. And today I'm joined by a great NCO. I've known Heidi, gosh, quite a while, I think. Our careers have kind of always kind of sidetracked with each other. You on the NCO side, me on the officer side. First Sergeant Heidi Crystal, you are the still First Sergeant for Alpha Company, 341st Military Intelligence, or did you swap out yet?
I did swap out.
Okay.
Yes.
But you're the full-time G3 Operations NCO. G33 Operations NCO.
Correct.
Intel professional, you got to the biathlon team, and longtime guardsman. So appreciate you coming on and sharing your story.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, so like always, we always start with intro and background.
Yeah, so First Sergeant Heidi Crystal, I've been in the Guard for 28 years now. It has flown by. I never thought I would stay that long. I started out as a signal support specialist in the Minnesota National Guard. And after I transferred out to Washington, I got assigned to 341st MI Battalion and fell in love with Intel. And so they were gracious enough to send me to DLI and reclass to Intel. And so I've been doing that since 2006. And then currently, I am the First Sergeant of Joint Force Headquarters.
Oh, look at that. Just moved from one First Sergeant to another.
Yes, one to another.
So I just like to ask, I think we all have an interesting Guard story. How'd you learn about the Guard?
So in high school, the recruiters always come and they tell you to take this cool test, the ASVAB, and it'll tell you how smart you are. And so I wanted to know and skip a class and take this test. And then the recruiters start calling. And so my mom took the phone call and thought the National Guard would be a great idea. I had never heard of it and was not interested until they said they would pay for college. So that's what really got me into it. My mom pushed for it. The recruiter sold me on it and I signed up.
I think you hit it right there. I think I did the same thing. I was not interested in the military at all in high school, but they said, hey, if you take the ASVAB, you don't have to go to these classes. Great. I will do that.
Yes.
So, and you just do the test and that was it. And you never thought about it unless you were interested in the military.
Right. Yeah.
So you kind of already mentioned you didn't join originally as an Intel professional. You were signal,
right.
I think at the time, what is it, a 25?
25 uniform.
Yeah. So what drove you to switch over after coming out here to be intelligence?
I think the signal support just didn't fit me well. It wasn't common sense to me. I didn't entirely enjoy it. There were a lot of great people, but they all seemed to understand it better than me. So I'm a true believer that we're all not great at everything. And so I needed to try something different. And since I was the 25 uniform in 341st, I was surrounded by Intel and I had some amazing leadership that wanted to send me to 35 Mike School and DLI. And they encouraged me and pushed me for it. And I finally decided to do that. At the time, too, some of it was promotion. There was not a lot of units promoting in 25 uniform that had females in their units at that time. And so some of it was for that. But what a cool opportunity to go to DLI.
And we've talked about this. You did not go to DLI right away like most people do.
No.
You were a little bit older than the students that were there just because of them joining and then going right to DLI.
Right.
And this is kind of really at the beginning / I'd say first couple years of OIF, OEF.
Mm-hmm.
You were there as a reclass at DLI. So kind of talk about that experience of not being like the 19-year-old kid at DLI.
Right. So I think a little bit of it the hardship in it is that we've kind of established a life after you're 20 or 21. And so to uproot that and go to DLI, I think is hard for some people. I was up for the challenge. It sounded interesting to me. I wanted a change in my life. And so I went and you're in class with all the 18, 19 year old students. So a little bit different there. You're in a different unit for a little while or else you're put as a team leader. So some extra responsibility while you're there. But I think the biggest thing is watching kids come out of high school mm-hmm. and go right into DLI. And just there's a maturity gap, but they're all great soldiers. I think just understanding you're there to learn. And so I think that's where the difference was, that a lot of the 18, 19-year-olds are out on their own for the first time, and they just want to have fun, where I was there to learn a language.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were super, super smart, which was great. But having that concentration of just you're focused there to learn the language and come home.
Yeah. So how long were you at DLI for?
16 months.
So in what language?
Korean.
Korean. Do you still speak Korean?
I read and listen to it better than I speak it. I do take the DLPT still.
Yeah.
But because once you get to E8 rank, you don't have to do the speaking portion anymore.
Yeah.
I do try to every now and then.
Yeah. So Pete, you know, if everybody that watches the podcast knows Pete, he's a Korean linguist.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a newly Intel soldier, but has
yes.
spoken Korean probably most of his life,
right.
Which is fantastic. So you had a chance, go to DLI, and then you had some limited deployment opportunities as an mm-hmm. Intel professional. So kind of talk about that.
So when we deployed with 341st, I was I had gone to DLI, but I hadn't gone to 35 mic school yet. So I deployed as a 25 uniform. Halfway through the deployment, I got the opportunity to go to 35 mic school and then go right back to deployment. So to go from a schoolhouse setting right into deployment, doing what you just learned, was a phenomenal experience. And then I spent the second half of the deployment as a 35 mic.
So you went from deployed
mm-hmm.
back to school, to a TRADOC mm-hmm. environment, back to a deployment.
Yes.
How fascinating was it to go from like, hey, this is what we're doing overseas, to this is what you're going to do overseas, to this is what we're doing overseas?
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. At the time, I probably didn't think it was amazing because it was a lot to handle. But the fact that we had leadership that was willing to send a handful of soldiers back and then come back to the same deployment mm-hmm. In a different section and doing something completely different was great.
Yeah.
And just the difference that you see in the 10-level course and then what happens in real world was really neat to see.
Yeah. And were you full-time guard at that time? Or
nope, I was
so when did you kind of transition to becoming a full-time guardsman?
So after the deployment, I really enjoyed working with the guard full-time. And so I just sought out ADOS opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in 2007, right after the deployment, I came on ADOS working as the CLPM, and then went into AGR in 2008.
Yeah, and you've kind of been in the Intel world, or at least in some kind of IO Intel world, most
yes.
of your career until I think you came up here to the G3, correct?
Yes, between 341st, yeah.
So what is it about the career field that just, it stuck to you, and you seem like you've absolutely loved it your entire mm-hmm. career being over in the 341st or the 56 IO?
I really enjoy the people. I've worked with really smart people, smarter than I am, and it pressures people to learn more, to look into what other people are learning, the jobs that they're working. I found myself enjoying making sure soldiers get what they want on the Intel field. I understood it, but I was really good at admin and understanding the process. And so I think the thing that I looked forward to the most is soldiers coming up with an idea of what they want to do in their career, and I could help them make it happen.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a lot of the reason I stayed with the Intel community. I enjoy what I do and the people I work with.
Yeah. What's kind of that advice you'd give somebody who's interested in doing it?
In doing Intel?
Yeah.
Just go for it. You know, sometimes the schools scare soldiers off. You know, DLI is a long school. It's a big commitment. But how often do you get that time on the civilian side to go get paid to learn another language for 16 months, or even if it's just 12 months, and come out of there fluent? It's just awesome to graduate and be like, you know, 16 months ago, I couldn't speak anything in this language. So I think that scares people off. And I say, go for it. You know, it's never too late.
Yeah.
And then even the Intel schools, whichever one you decide to go to, you know, you can do it. Like, if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a great experience.
What was kind of the hardest part for you?
I would say DLI was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And I will tell anybody that, but it was one of the most rewarding. And I think it's hard because it's so long and you get burnt out. And all you're doing, you know, in regular school, you've got different subjects.
Yeah.
And so you're going from subject to subject. In this one, it's just one subject. It is just a language. I mean, it's that's all you're studying. So that was probably the hardest part. The 35 mic school was fun, challenging. But I would say just taking the time to go to DLI and focus on one thing for so long was difficult.
Yeah, I could see it. I'm just thinking back to like 35 Delta school, which now is 35 Alpha, on the Intel officer side. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you switched topics. Like, it felt like every week you had something new to focus on.
Right.
Whereas, like, at DLI, it's, hey, congrats. Today we're going to focus on writing and reading and then speaking and then, you know, having conversations and about the same exact topic.
Yeah. And even if you do switch topics, it's still just difficult because you're speaking at, like, third grade level, you know, very slow and everything, and you want to do better. But that's what the practice is for. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, another thing, and you kind of mentioned 28 years in the guard, you decided to do the biathlon team this last year.
I did.
And I don't know if most people, probably after 25 years in the guard, would be like, hey, sign me up for a challenge of the biathlon team.
Right.
So what was that thing that prompted you to do that?
Well, one, I had never heard of the biathlon team till 2024. And so I was like flabbergasted that this was a thing for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so in 2024, when I heard about it, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Never thought about it again. And then early 25 was asked if I wanted to join the team because they needed more females. And I think part of it was, one, I like to try new things. I like to do adventurous things. I like to do things that throw people off. And I also am coming towards retirement soon and had this panic of I'm not going to get these opportunities again.
Yeah.
And so between wanting to do something adventurous and loving the opportunity and going to my home state, Minnesota.
I was going to say you got to go to Minnesota and compete.
I decided to do it and it wasn't easy, but it was a blast. Great coach. Chief Androsky is a great coach. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, being from Minnesota, you're probably like, hey, this is great. I can go back to Minnesota for a few days. Were you a big like cross country skier before that or?
No. So I've never cross country skied before. And so, but I was told, hey, you don't have to have skied before. You can do it. We'll teach you. I'm like, all right, sign me up.
That is Jack Androsky's famous catchphrase right there. Hey, you don't have to know anything about this. We can show you.
Yeah. I mean, he showed us. I spent probably the first 3 hours on my backside just keep falling. But after lunch, everybody was doing better and he just kept encouraging us. And obviously I wasn't the greatest out there. And for a while I told people, oh, I'm from Minnesota. Well, once I found out the Minnesota team is fantastic, I stopped saying I was from Minnesota. Like, I didn't want to embarrass them.
I'm from Southern California. Right. I've never seen snow.
Right. But everybody from every state is so encouraging. They are just out there encouraging everybody. A lot of the same people do it each year. So you're networking with other states. And so they were fantastic. Jack was fantastic. And I would 100% do it again.
Yeah. No, I've seen the video, the photo. Obviously, you had a spill at the end of a race, but it all worked out well.
It did. Honestly, like I didn't fall. I don't think. Well, I didn't fall through the first two races, except for at the end of the big race. And as embarrassing as it can be, everybody was out there just having fun and we all laughed it off. And I said, I've only been skiing for 2 days. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So
nope, and that's the right attitude, especially with cross country skiing. It's one of those things. It takes a long time to learn how to do it. I think I've cross country skied throughout my junior high and high school years. And then I just gave it up. And I imagine if I tried to get back on them again, I'd be falling every couple feet.
So. Right. And then you got to shoot in the middle of it when you're out of breath.
What's harder, the skiing or the shooting?
The skiing.
The skiing.
Yes.
The shooting wasn't as hard.
I mean,
even though you're kind of exhausted.
You can blame your misses on being out of breath.
Yeah.
But yeah, the skiing and staying off. You get into a rhythm when you're skiing and you've got four or five strokes in and then suddenly you throw your rhythm off and you have to start again. So yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of alluded, you know, eventually retirement is on the you know, horizon.
Yes.
What are the things that you think you'll miss about the guard eventually?
Obviously the people. I love what I do. I love helping soldiers. And so I think that is the scary part of retirement is how am I going to continue doing what I love when I retire? So it's just going to be helping, encouraging, seeing the successes of the soldiers that you did help and then missing the community.
Yeah. What's kind of advice you'd give anybody who's just interested in joining the Guard in general?
Biggest advice is if you're thinking about joining the Guard, talk to a recruiter and then if it's something that you want to do, but you're a little scared, just do it anyways. I only thought I was going to be in for 6 years and I was going to get out. And here I am, you know, 28 years.
Yeah.
It becomes a lifelong learning.
It's a lifelong learning.
You get education that you don't get elsewhere. I say, if you're in the garden, you're thinking about getting out, or you're not that serious in it, do the classes, do the PME. All you're going to do is better yourself. And I think even when you go on the civilian side, to be able to say that you went to leadership classes, that's a big deal. And mm-hmm. a lot of civilians don't get that. So I say just keep learning in everything that you do. Take the opportunities that you get and ask. A lot of soldiers don't ask for things and they end up getting out and they could have got something more, or then maybe they would have stayed in if they would have asked. And so I always say, ask for the world. You might get it. And if you don't... You didn't lose anything.
Yeah, and I think you hit a point where it's like the first job you pick in the Guard is not the last job you're going to have in the Guard. There are many career pathways in this place. So I think it's something that people always need to remember. My first job was a combat engineer.
Yeah.
I have no desire to ever go back there, even though I absolutely love seeing it and watching them work. I enjoy being a military intelligence and public affairs and information operations officer. So it's a much different career field. So
yeah, I think a foot in and then figure it out, because when we join, we don't necessarily always know what every MOS does. I had never actually heard of Intel when I joined. Maybe I would have picked it sooner, maybe not.
Yeah.
But yeah, a foot in, and then, you know, as you learn and as you grow, maybe your mindset changes and you can change.
That is true. That's true. Anything else, Heidi, before we kind of close? Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. And I know you're like, hey, I really don't know. I'm not that interesting. But like I said, I think there's always an interesting story in every guard's career. Like every guardsman's career has some interesting path that led to this point. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing it with us. So,
yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. If you like the video, give it a like. If you want to know more, throw a comment in the notes and we'll pass those along. Subscribe for future videos. And hey, I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.